I had a funny night last night. So a proud boy from the city said, I want to come up and hang out in the burbs. And I go, that's stupid, but okay. So I'm going out to my car, and I see a car creeping. Now, being a conservative in 2017, or whatever I am, new right, alt-light, means, you know, people dox you, that you get death threats, they come to your house. I don't think people understand what goes on. I'm going to get to that in a second, but, you know, I've mentioned Dina Lash having to move, Martina Markota had to move. An article came out about her today that Matthew Sheffield wrote, saying that the Daily Caller is drifting into madness. What is it? Let me see the exact title. It's really annoying. Daily Caller gone wild. Tucker Carlson's site descends into far-right weirdness, he says. And he writes about Martina Markota, who was a burlesque dancer. He calls her a stripper. They're real sexist, these liberals, when they get their teeth into you. And he's just crapping all over her, calling her a secret Nazi. And this is determined by who she hangs out with. She was seen in the picture with Baked Alaska. She hangs out with me. She did a dance called Milk is Racist, where she poured milk all over herself. He claims that is mocking the or perpetuating the myth that African Americans tend to be more lactose intolerant than whites. Yeah, I'm sure that's what she was going for. She wasn't going for the fact that the left has lost its mind and anything we pretend is a symbol drives them insane, from an okay symbol to a Kekistan flag to a cartoon frog to milk. He wasn't perpetuating exactly the behavior that the performance art was based on. No. It was an attack on blacks. So that's the culture we live in, right? So I'm sure Chris Hayes, Rachel Maddow, and John Oliver, when they see a car creeping around in their neighborhood, they don't care. They don't think about it. I have to think about it. If I see a dead squirrel on my lawn, which I did the other day, I have to wonder if someone put it there. Is it a symbol? Actually, I use that dead squirrel quite a bit because squirrels eat my coolant wires. So I sort of left him on the driveway just so the other squirrels would know, this ain't the place you want to be, my friend. It works with moles, not the metaphorical moles, the literal moles. I don't know if it works with squirrels. We'll find out. But anyway, so I see this car creeping, and it's going at 2 miles an hour. Then it slowly turns towards me, and I'm standing there. And it's not a very intimidating position to be when you're facing a car, because it's a car, and it has lights on you. What are you going to do, beat it up? It can see everything. It can see its prey, but you're just standing there. So I stand there. Then he pulls right just after my driveway. He stops. So I go out and I get his plates. And then he leaves. So I jump in my car and I start following him. And he's still driving very slow. And I think, what the hell is going on with this guy? So he's creeping around the neighborhood and there's no real direction. He's turning left, turning right. He's not headed towards the main road. So eventually he pulls over, I guess, because he sees I'm following him. And by the way, he's probably scared. This is the problem. This paranoia is effective. When the left terrorizes us, there's a lot of autopilot terror that goes on where they don't even have to participate and they've got us running around chasing our tails. That's the beauty of terrorism. You know, you don't have to always be doing it. Sometimes you can just sort of plant the seed and let it run wild. So yes, you got me. I'm a paranoid freak. So I pull up to this guy. He pulls over. I stop right next to him so no one can get past us. I'm blocking the road. And I get out. And then he screeches away. So I jump back in my car and I'm chasing him. We're going around the corner, around the corner, around the corner. And then I call the cops. And I go, I'm in hot pursuit. And then I lose him because it was hard to find the cop's exact number. I didn't want to call 911. And then I realize, I'm actually by the cop station. I'll come in. So I walk into the police station. I tell them everything I just told you. And he goes, buddy, it's called Pokemon. They were crawling around your neighborhood getting their little Pokemon, guys. And I said, that game's kind of old. But your theory is much better than mine, so that's going in the top position. It was someone playing Pokemon. So then I go to the bar and I meet this guy. And I say, happy to meet you, happy to hang out. But you should probably know, I tell him the whole story. And I go, I think I was that paranoid because someone told me you're a Fed. I know it sounds crazy. But it's not. I mean, the right is littered with spies. They're all convinced that there's secret Nazis afoot. So every remotely right-wing movement, and by the right-wing I mean non-liberal, non-devoutly liberal, non-left, far-left-wing movement has spies. Jack Buckby, Martina Markota's fiancé, just discovered that this woman who has been working with him on his campaign and working with him on, I would call him a British nationalist. He's definitely not racist. He worked with UKIP for a while, left them because they weren't confronting the Islam problem in Britain. Now he's with Tommy Robinson. He found out that this woman that he's been working with for 6 months has been a spy, a journalist, secretly reporting on him. They must be very disappointed, these spies, because he goes, I mean, I don't care. It's bizarre. I'm interested on a human level. What kind of person would do this? This isn't someone infiltrating the mob or Islam or ISIS, I should say. This is just someone following a conservative around for 6 months. Who's paying for all this? So he goes, yeah, it confuses me on a human level, but it's not like I secretly use the N-word when you catch me alone or talk about Jewish conspiracies or describe the various rapings I did that day when you catch me at the pub. The pub is me. So congratulations, you got me. What's the secret? Even the KKK doesn't have that big a secret. You know Nancy Pelosi's daughter's in the KKK, Alexandra Pelosi? I'm sorry if I've already told you this, but it's pretty funny. She was working at NBC many moons ago. I'm going to say 20 years ago. And they said, we need you to go undercover in the KKK. By the way, if that Klan is as evil as everyone says it is, why are you sending a woman there to go undercover? She was probably 20 years old at the time. Isn't that a little bit dangerous? Like, they're going to slit her throat if they find out that she's a spy. Who is the producer who sent Nancy Pelosi's daughter into the Klan? I know her because my friend did the music for her movie Journeys with George, where she took a Hi-8 camera and followed George Bush around, George Bush Jr. It's a good movie. There's no secrets, though. It's not like he said, all right, they're gone. The left thinks that the right is that Eddie Murphy sketch, White Like Me. Look it up. It's from the 90s. Written by a conservative, by the way. What's his name? Morton Downey Jr.? It's a sketch where Eddie Murphy paints his face white and puts on a blonde wig, and every time there's no blacks around, people are dancing and everything's free, and he goes to the bank and he goes, hi, I'd like to take a loan, please. And they go, yeah, just take it. No one's around. And the black guy who he first met at the bank said, well, you need collateral to get a loan. And then he goes, oh, I'd like to speak to someone else, please. And then the white guy comes in and he goes, sorry, that guy was causing you trouble. And Eddie Murphy goes, ha, 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 silly Negro. And then they both laugh and he gets the loan for free. That's what the left thinks the right is like. There's this secret world. I remember I did a pilot for Vice TV for Showtime way back, and we said, let's mock that Dinner for Five show. This is David Cross and I. Let's mock that Dinner for Five show, but we'll have the five weirdest possible combination. We'll have Jared Taylor, the self-described racial realist. We'll have Eek, E-A-K. He's a circus freak who's tattooed his face. We'll have a 14-year-old kid and a paraplegic. We just had a mishmash of people. So we went out for beers later, and David was convinced that that people like Jared Taylor use the N-word as soon as doors are closed. And Jared says, well, to be quite frank, David, I don't think I've ever heard that word spoken in parlance. I mean, I know some of the, what you would describe as some of the worst people alive, but that word isn't commonly used. And David was, you know, following the Eddie Murphy sketch. Anyway, this woman's following Jack Buckby around. And the truth of the matter is that we are under siege from these saboteurs. And I went from calling them fake to calling them mentally ill to my new take on it is they are crazy ex-girlfriends. They're stalkers. And they go, I know you're with Barbara. I know you're into that sports bullshit. That's what I said to Roaming Millennial on yesterday's show. They do that, though. This article Matt Sheffield wrote about Martina Marcota, she's saying he's saying that she was featured with Baked Alaska. She's been on my show. Therefore, she's drifting into Nazi territory. So he's mad about who she's been with. Doesn't that sound like an ex-boyfriend, an ex-girlfriend? He's a mental patient. Yeah, she's drifting into Nazi territory. You know why she started getting into conservatism? Because of her ovaries. This is something the left could never conceive of. But Martina realized, as she's one of like six people in her family, her sister's very ill, dying of leukemia. And she realized, you know, I have my own mortality, I have my own ovaries, I want to have my own kids. I want a traditional relationship. She was in the burlesque art scene at this club called The Box. So it's all LGBT weirdos, trannies. There's, for example, here's one of the shows. This woman, I don't know how to say it, uses a Donald Trump doll to stimulate herself. It goes in and out of her vagina, and then she squirts, makes a big mess. She's actually from the South, this girl, and she's not left-wing. She doesn't love Trump, but she doesn't dislike him. But she wears a flannel shirt and dresses up like a redneck, like a sad whore, and does this thing to herself that she doesn't really believe in for money. So that's the kind of world she's in. And she realized, I'm not going to meet the man of my dreams here at the Donald Trump dildo convention. So she starts getting into conservatism. And she met me, and then I introduced her to Jack. And the next thing you know, she has a fiance. And guess what happened with that? Antifa called the FBI and said he's a terrorist, and now he can't come here. But Gavin, just call the FBI and say, no, I'm not. Yes, that's a slow process. It's sort of like a domestic. If a woman says you hit her, there's a year of your life gone, no matter how innocent you are. You could be in another country when she made the accusation. But for the paperwork to go through, it's going to be a year. And that's the situation Jackson, trying to clear his name based on a lie that he's a terrorist. Meanwhile, this guy's busting his ass and having to live in seclusion. Jack Buckby, Tommy Robinson, all those guys you see talking about Islam in Britain, they live in the middle of nowhere with not armed guards, but cameras, and they're armed, and dogs, and all kinds of crap. Because that's the price you pay to stand up to Islam, which is why you don't see liberals attacking Islam, because they're scared. So they'd rather attack women like Martina. But yeah, the real reason she hung out with me is not because she's drifting into the far right, but because she'd like a man. She'd like some eggs fertilized. And they're trying to do it. They're trying to be normal. Jack and Martina are trying to be a normal family in today's lunatic era. And it's a struggle. It's like Romeo and Juliet. Liberals don't want them to get together. And they have to fight. I hope they don't kill themselves. So anyway, meet this guy. And I say, people think you're a Fed. And it's plausible. I think there are Feds and Proud Boys, and I want them to know that we have nothing to hide, and you have the easiest gig in the world. Your job, join the mob, scary, you know? Going undercover is scary, but going undercover in the Proud Boys, you just get to drink beers and hang out. It must be the most coveted gig. I'm surprised there's not more 65-year-old Feds. You know, if you fly to China, all the stewardesses are in their 60s because it's such a coveted gig. You fly there and back, and you've done a 40-hour work week. This spying on others should be the gig. So I tell him he's a Fed, and I'm, or if people think he's a spy, and I say I don't really care if you are either way. I have nothing to hide. I talk to the FBI all the time. We're bros. I hang out with cops. There's nothing here, just like Nancy Pelosi's daughter, Alexandra Pelosi. She joined the KKK. She hung out with them for, I think she lived with them for about 2 months. And she had a hidden camera, risking her life. And eventually she goes, I'm going to go, I have to go poo. And then she takes off. And she gives the footage to NBC, and they watch it all, and they go, we can't use this. And she goes, why? It's too racist? And she goes, no. They go, it's too boring. You didn't do anything. I didn't even hear one N-word. And she goes, yeah, that's what they do. They barbecue. But didn't they burn can't they burn crosses? Yeah, they burned crosses one night. I got that. But nothing happened. They just light them up, and then they talk, and then they barbecue more. And they go, sorry, Alexandra, we appreciate your work. And when she told me this, I go, wait a minute. So you didn't disjoin. You didn't cancel your membership. And she goes, well, no, I guess not. And I go, so you're in the KKK. Nancy Pelosi's daughter is in the KKK. So this Fed thing is plausible. And he gets mad, of course, as one would. Then he's in a bad mood. And that's problematic because he trekked all the way out to the burbs and he said his wife's going to pick him up, which is stupid. She had to drive an hour. And then he's grumpy. And booze and grump are not a good combination. And then some guy sits at the bar and he's got a Union Jack shirt on. And my friend he decides he wants to fight him. And he goes, nice shirt. He goes, oh, yeah. I lived in London for a year. And he goes, you know, you wouldn't wear a shirt like that in America with an American flag, but you're happy to wear a Union Jack. It's cool to be a nationalist about another country, but I don't see you proudly espousing nationalism in Britain or espousing it here in America. And he misunderstands my buddy, and he goes, no, I'm not a nationalist. I hate Trump. And my friend goes, yeah, that's what I'm saying. And it looks like it's going to, and he goes, look, let me explain something to you. This is a guy with the Union Jack shirt. He says, we're in this area, you just say that you hate Trump and everyone will be friends. Everyone here hates him. And I just said, well, we don't hate him. We're big fans, I said. And then it was getting ornery and my friend wanted the other guy to step outside. And I said, let's just go. So we leave. We go to another bar. The wife shows up. They leave. I would give it a 5 out of 10. As far as evenings go. Car chase, feds, near fist fight. That's not amusing to me, but that's the life of a non-liberal in New York City or anywhere near it. My idea of a fun night, I like sitting down in a quiet bar, no TVs, no women. Sorry, ladies. You don't belong in a bar. That's why you order fruity drinks. Your body is a temple. It makes people. It's not normal for you to drink alcohol. You know when you see a woman going, I'll have a bourbon. You just think, fuck off. I'll have a bourbon. Bourbon tastes like gasoline. And we like that. I'm actually craving one right now, which is a sign of an alcoholic because it's morning. But we like polluting our bodies. That's why I have tattoos. I have a tattoo on my arm. It's my daughter's two hamsters that died, Greg and Tiny Toes. That's a gravestone on my arm. Why did I scribble on my body permanently? Because I don't care about my stupid body. It's a garbage heap. I have a tattoo of an ass on my ass. That ass has a tattoo of an ass on its ass. And then that ass has a tattoo of an ass on its ass. So I have a tattoo of an ass of an ass of an ass on my ass. Why did I do that? Because it was funny. It amused me. Who sees it? No one but my wife, who's not impressed. So it's just stupid. Look at a spider. A male spider is nothing. It's just a dick. Tiny little spider dick. Female spiders are 50 times the size. Black widow, female black widow, she's a giant. Male black widow is just a circle with legs and a dick. And then after it's done, nature says, you know what? Eat that guy. He's done. And the female black widow eats the male black widow. I sound like I'm being misandrist here, criticizing men. I'm just saying that we can take a beating. And we do. Boy, do we ever. By every single metric imaginable, men have it worse than women, including rape, thanks to prison. So I don't like women in bars, sorry. And they laugh so loud. I did a video about this. They scream laugh because they're drunk. But I like a quiet conversation in a bar, sort of like if you watch Gran Torino, the bar Walt Kowalski goes to where he tells that joke. I think he says, black guy, Jew, and an Irishman walk into a bar. And the bartender says, what the hell are you guys doing here? Get out of here. I believe that's the joke. And there's no TVs in that bar. That's my, and I like sitting in a bar and coming up with hypotheticals, like would you rather drown or be buried alive? Would you rather fight a shark or a squid? You know, brain exercises. That was not last night. Last night was yelling, it was packed. Tons and tons of au pairs, by the way. French au pairs riddle my old man bar because I live in a fancy neighborhood, so everyone has an au pair. And oh my God, another reason I don't like women in bars is because I'm married and we don't live under Sharia law, unfortunately. And these women are breathtaking. Like this one girl, she had breasts the size of cars and they're nearly dumped out on the bar. And she's there with a baseball hat on and sweats, looking sculpted like a goddess and listening to the Beastie Boys. Then there's some other French au pair wearing like a dress with ripped nylons. She looks like she's in a punk band, and she's like, she looks like a drawing. There was at least three drawing level beauties there. That's distracting. Okay. Well, you're not a potential lay. So you're just bothering me. Get out of here or put a burqa on for crying out loud. So anyway, I come home and I see that article about the Daily Caller gone wild. Tucker Carlson's site descends into far-right weirdness. So this guy's contention is Tucker Carlson is at fault because someone on the site he started has ties to me. How is that for a tenuous link? And you think Linda Sarsour is pro-Sharia. She's an anti-Semite. So she values a system that treats women as second-class citizens, and she dislikes Jews. And you want to talk about dog whistles? They're convinced that we have all these weird symbols. Here's a weird symbol that's a dog whistle that's real. When Muslims talk about interest, they're talking about Jews. They say, imagine a world with loans where you just pay back the money you borrowed and there's no interest. First of all, that's retarded. I don't want to loan you money I'm not going to loan you 10 bucks to give me 10 bucks back unless you're my family member. What's in it for me? No. There's no incentive there, dummies. And by the way, Muslims do this thing where they say, oh, we can't do a mortgage because it has interest. So we're going to lease it and we'll pay you a certain amount over time and then we'll also pay a fee for having to lease this. And you go, yeah, that's a mortgage. You just change the word. So your anti-Jew system is still the same system, and that system works, so shut up. I remember one time I was coming back from Fox News with my dad. I did Red Eye, and you should have seen the car that picked us up. It looked like a mosque. I thought I was in Mecca. There's things hanging off the rearview mirror, and there's all these doilies on the seats, and you know, all kinds of ornate decorations along the side and the back. Even the thing that gave you the Kleenex had a bunch of ornate crap all over it. He hands us this pamphlet. Hello, my friend, please, I want to help you. Here, read this. And I'm looking through it. It's got all this Muslim writing on it on the front, and it's in English. And that never says Jews, never says Islam, but it's all about interest. Imagine a world with no interest, where money... This is stuff I've seen Linda Sarsour talk about. And we realize what's going on here. And my dad and I have had a few. And we went to the bar after the show. And so we just rail into him. And we're yelling, and you give that pamphlet to the wrong person, pal! And then I realized, wait a minute, Dad. We're in his car, whipping down the highway, headed to my home where I live. So then we started to tone it down and change the whole angle and say, oh, of course, I mean, interest is a bitch. I reported him when we got home, like a real man. Had him fired. But no, we yelled at him for a long time until we realized how dangerous it was. And then we find out that the driver on the West Side Highway who killed 8 people was an Uber driver here on a diversity visa that Obama hooked up. And it made me think, we are living in a society that is being dismantled. And it's being dismantled by astute saboteurs who are doing a very good job. The globalists, the Soroses, the politicians, the amoral individuals with no sense of tradition and history are doing an incredible job of taking apart our society like a Jenga game, just removing piece after piece after piece. And this is also true in the right, not just this guy who wrote about Martina Markota, but there's a lot of these guys on these right-wing watch, hate watch sites, and they always talk about conservatives. They never talk about Islam. They'll find some real Nazis like Richard Spencer and that group, Traditional Workers Party. They'll have like a Weave. They'll have Andrew Anglin, maybe 4 or 5 actual guys. By the way, guys who don't hide it. Guys who you could spy on them for 6 months and the things you'll hear in the bar are the things they write. So these guys don't hem and haw about their beliefs. But they'll also lump in with those guys, people who don't agree with that. But they'll say, oh, they're hiding it. They're scared. They want to mainstream it or something. No Islam. And you think you're just a saboteur. I don't know if you're conscious of that. You're likely a useful idiot. Like Will Sommer at The Hill. He's obsessed with me like a crazy ex-girlfriend. And everything I've said, he usurps clips out of context and makes them sound bad. Willfully ignores jokes. Like that thing I did, 10 Things I Hate About the Goddamn Jews. That was a sort of an homage to a Robert Crumb comic where he mocks anti-Semitism. And anyone who had watched the video would see that my problem with the people in Israel when I was there was they don't seem to be Zionist enough. They don't like their own wall. They have Muslims in parliament in Israel. They have Muslim communities. You know what they do in these Muslim communities? They bitch about the roads aren't nice enough. In Israel. Imagine Germans in 1942 complaining about German neighborhoods in America. No, they were in internment camps. But in Israel, they treat them way too well. You know, if a terrorist attacks someone in Israel and he blows his leg off, they'll treat him. Uh-oh, get him to the hospital. Let's treat his wounds. We do that too with Omar Khadr. He was shooting at medics who were trying to help him. Killed one, blinded another. We air helicopter him into a German surgeon, fix him up, put him in Guantanamo. He gets out. He sues Canada and gets, what was it, $10 million? The first question they asked him when he got out of Guantanamo to the CBC, what are you going to have for dinner, Omar? Well, those are some cutting questions. But yeah, Will Sommer, like a crazy ex-girlfriend, stalks Proud Boys. He'll say something like, this one really pisses me off too. Same with the Israel thing. A bunch of Proud Boys went to Texas to fight, to hand out supplies. We brought a boat down called the SS Uhuru. And saved tons of families, brought water to everyone. They were there for 5 days. And we have a joke, by the way. We talk about, in Proud Boys, we talk about the elders. We have to consult the elders. And some ABC journalists came down. They go, we understand there's Nazis here. You said you were you had to speak to the elders. Where are the elders? Asking about the elders. Not, you know, what's with this truck full of water bottles that you're taking everywhere? Anyway, we took a... It's lame to take pictures of yourself handing out supplies when you do charity work. That's not why you do charity. But I have those pictures, dozens. I'm going to put them up. But one of the pictures they took was them just standing with their guns in 2 feet of water and said something like, we're ready for the looters. And Antifa picked that up and said, they don't look like they're ready to help anyone. And everyone ran with that. It's amazing when you see these controversies. You go, where is this from? Antifa. Okay. That's the Klan. No one talks about the Klan's tweet. These guys are radical, violent leftists. They're the alt-left. The mainstream liberal media treats the alt-left with total reverence. at least we disavow our radicals. And this is true, too, of Proud Boys. They say, well, okay, if you don't have a Nazi problem, why are you always saying I'm, you say you have to weed them out? And you say, yeah, why do you even have to say I'm not a Nazi? I go, everyone has to say that. If you were moral and you had any kind of character, then on the left, you would disavow black radicals who hate white people and say things like at Black Lives Matter rallies, okay, all the white people get to the back, please. I want the people of color in the front. That's racist. You would disavow the Linda Sarsour, the jihadists. You would recognize that Islam is rife with all the things you hate. It's rife with homophobia and sexism. It's even racist. You know, Gaddafi pretended he loved Africa, but he called them monkeys behind closed doors. But no, that doesn't fit the narrative. So they claim that we do that. They claim that we have a secret society. When the secret society is right in front of you, it's called Islam. So I disavow Nazis because that's what a moral person does. And it's nothing new. William F. Buckley was doing it at National Review. He was weeding them out. And he did a good job. And I wish the left would weed them out. Every movement has radicals. We just pay attention to ours. They don't. And they focus on ours with a myopic intensity of a magnifying glass on an ant. And it makes me wonder what their motive is. Imagine that was your job, writing about writers. That's what Will Sommer and Matt Sheffield and all these losers do. They're Bigfoot chasers. They're hunting unicorns. And they got Charlottesville. That was one case. And they won't shut up about it because it was their one example of their worldview coming true. So now every conservative is driving around a Dodge Challenger trying to run over fat chicks. That's what's really going on with us. Or it's the potential. Or someone you know might. Guilt by association. All cats are mammals. All dogs are mammals. All cats are dogs. That's how their brain operates. And they are saboteurs. So this is my way of introducing a concept. If you were to pick up a book called How to Dismantle Society, sort of, that's kind of what Saul Alinsky's Rules for Radicals is. A book, by the way, he dedicated to Satan. Not Hitler. Worse, Satan. Marx dedicated poems to Satan, Lucifer. Faith Goldie told me that and I laughed. I thought she was exaggerating. Then I looked it up. No, Saul Alinsky really did dedicate his book, Rules of Radicals, to Satan. And Hillary Clinton sees it as a Bible. That tells you everything you need to know right there. But if you were to pick up a book that was even more obtuse about its motives, and it was called How to Dismantle Society, it would look a lot like the left and the right and their witch hunts. Here's what's really going on with the SPLC and the ADL. I got this from Ezra Levant, a Zionist. He goes, what these groups really do is they prey on Jewish people. They prey on old, wealthy Jews who have a justified PTSD from World War II, if they were probably kids now, but they've heard the stories from their parents, and they are petrified of it happening again. I totally understand. I'm sure it's the same in Cambodia with the victims of Pol Pot. I'm sure it's the same in Czechoslovakia with the victims of Stalin. I'm sure it's the same in China with the victims of Mao. You know, trauma lasts a couple generations, especially when there's a massive genocide. Although Mao's 70 million is by far the lead there. And he could do with a little more bad publicity. Hitler's third. It goes Mao, Stalin, Hitler. All bad guys. But I wouldn't mind seeing Mao on slightly fewer t-shirts, please. Including his compatriot Che Guevara, who murdered 3,000 people point blank, half of them just because they didn't like him. He loved murdering people. Gays, too. He hated gays. Thought they were disgusting. He hated blacks. Thought they were inferior. But no, he's cool on your t-shirt. There's this genocidal trauma. So what the ADL and the SPLC does, they go to these old Jewish people and they say, look, there's Nazis afoot. They're lurking around every corner. Gavin McInnes has secret meetings with them. Give me a giant check, and I'll send in spies, and I'll ridicule them, I'll expose them, I'll catch them. And so they get all this money to make these old people, traumatized old people, feel better. They prey on them, And then they come up with these hate lists. And they get three bad guys. And then they just fluff up the numbers with a bunch of conservatives to make it look good, like they've done their homework. And they're always really bad at it, too. They spell names wrong and stuff. And then they get their check. And people like Will Sommer at The Hill go, solid reporting from the SPLC. Not possible. So are you seeing a pattern here? The pattern is a lack of morality. And I'm convinced that you get less morality from the childless than you do from the childed. Because they have no skin in the game. Angela Merkel doesn't have kids. I don't believe she really cares what happens to Germany after she dies. It's all about her political career now. Those of us with kids worry about our non-existent grandkids. So we have stake. We have skin in the game. And that makes us more moral. You know, it's really important that I have character. It's really important that I mean what I say. It's really important that when I do a handshake deal, that I make that happen. I would rather die than promise someone something, shake on it, and not deliver. I know what you're saying. You're talking about that bet I made with Leslie Arfin, where I bet her $80 that Tom Cruise grew up in Ottawa. And that was not true. He lived in Ottawa for maybe a year. I owe her $80 and I will pay her. And the fact that that bothers me shows you that I'm keeping track of all this. I will pay her the $80, I promise you. And my word means a lot to me because I want my kids to go, oh, his word is big. If my dad shakes on it, whew, he's got character. I think that will literally save your kid's life. You know, kids without moms, kids without dads, they're the ones who disappear with some shady character at 2 in the morning and end up in East New York and end up in the East River. You need to deliver. You can't hover around your kids like a guardian angel. So your job until they're a teenager is to instill with them character. So when they get in dangerous situations, they go, yeah, this feels fishy. You don't seem like an honorable person. I'm out of here. And they escape. So yeah, these saboteurs are, I'm dubious of them. So let me explain this book to you. It doesn't exist, by the way. But I might write it. How to Demolish Society. How to Slowly Dismantle Society. How to Ruin America. That maybe is a better title. One thing you should do, and we'll get to the childless too. You have to dismantle the family. Christianity you got to get rid of. But a fun game to start is math. Ruin math. Because free speech is very effective. It gets information out. But information needs data. It needs numbers. If you had a million illegals in America, I wouldn't talk about illegal immigration. It would be irrelevant. We take in a million legally a year. We have 1 million illegals. Whatever. Things are pretty good. There's 320 million people here. Less, you know, a tiny fraction of them are illegal. So don't talk about it. Now, the real numbers, even the liberals say it's 15. Some of them go down to 11. That's catastrophic. That number isn't remotely true, but that's still very bad. I believe 300 a day cross over illegally, although that number's plummeting. But it's more like 30 million. I've even heard Coulter's research can get that upwards of 50. And she knows how to research, by the way. No one talks about Anne's incredible researching skills. But if you read Adios Amigos, the research alone, right or left, you should read it for that. It's incredible. And she also exposes why the previously held numbers are wrong. So now it's an issue, illegal immigration. And that's because of the math. Or say education. You go, oh, we need more money for education. Yeah, that sounds good. We do. We probably do. And then you go, well, what do they spend per student per year? Like 12 grand. Some states up as high as 20 grand. Really? Just to sit in a desk and read a textbook from last year? That seems like a lot of money. How much do teachers get? Oh, they don't make any money. Oh, really? That's terrible. Yeah, they make like 40, 50 grand. Oh, well, some of them senior, they'll make 80. And in administration, they'll make maybe 100, 200. The principals and administrators. Oh, that's a lot. How many days do they work? And then Peter Brimelow, the much, much pilloried and vilified Brimelow, wrote a great book on this called The Worm and the Apple. Then you learn they make about $60 an hour. when you factor in the few hours they work. No, but they don't go home at 3:20. They have to prep. Oh, BS. They don't even teach. You know what teachers do? They do that scam where they say, we're going to do public speaking, guys, because it's so important. In the real world, in the workforce, you better know how to public speak. That's not true. That's unequivocally false. I ran an ad agency. We had upwards of 20, 30 employees when you count the contractors and the people that would just appear when we had big jobs. Sebastian and I were the only ones who pitched. And every time we brought more people, they'd do a bad job. And Sebastian was good with the sort of ad talk. I was good at being funny and keeping it light and amusing everyone. And those were very rare skills Sebastian and I had. Not particularly, and we weren't better than anyone, by the way. The other skills the other guys had, Rob was a cameraman. I couldn't do any of that, and he was obviously crucial to advertising. If our commercials looked bad, they were useless. So I'm not saying I was somehow magical. I just had one weird talent, and Sebastian another, and it was very unusual. It was like throwing a fastball at 100 miles an hour. So the fact that everyone in school has to do public speaking is BS. It's so the teacher can sit on his ass, or more likely her ass. And then they do that thing where the students have to evaluate each other. They have to mark each other. That also is the teacher coming up with an excuse not to work. So the public speaking myth is a way they get their labor down. So I think it could be even higher than $60 an hour. Because when we do those public speaking things, they take about a week. When I say when we do, I'm 47. When we did. They take about a week to do. And it's just you sitting in a class being lectured to by students who say, the Leonardo da Vinci was a painter from Italy. He invented the helicopter. Here on my PowerPoint is a picture of the helicopter he sketched. It's basically the same as a helicopter today. He came up with this 232 years ago. And then you give him a B? I don't know. Hey, Marty, here's a B. You cool with that? Well, the teacher just... I remember sometimes they would wheel in a VCR and we'd just watch Ghostbusters. Let's watch a movie and we'll talk about, I don't know, special effects. I'll crowbar some sort of reason we have to watch it. No, it's a series. It's To Kill a Mockingbird. So we're learning about the law. Ooh. Anyway, step one, before any of the other dismantling, is to get rid of math, get rid of data, get rid of stats. I predicted this many years ago. I said, you're going to soon see math being described as racist. And it is. Math is racist. Can you find that, Dave? Go look up some article about math being racist. Data is racist. Eric Holder, when he's the DA, he said no more accruing stats on race and crime. So anytime you see stats on race and crime, they will be from 2012 or whenever the year he did. So wait, there's my tweet on it. So math is racist, how data is driving inequality. And that's on Money CNN. Doctors, by the way. So here's my tweet. I said, doctors went out of fashion when they got in the way of the trans thing. Next is statisticians and mathematicians. And that's what happened. Math became racist. Now, the beauty of killing math is you can now focus on platitudes. So, refugees, welcome. We need more. How many are here? I don't know. And Fleckus Talks does this all the time, and I highly advise you do it too. You say to someone who's pro-open borders, how many are here? And the numbers will vary from the thousands to the billions. You'll never get between 15 and 50 million, which is the correct number. Never, ever. Another fun game to play with them and proof that the dismantling math technique is working is you say, how many should we have? How many is too many? And immediately their brains, their tiny peanut brains, will go to the Bonneville Flats. And they'll go, we could fit in tens of millions more. Yes, we could, technically. I think my dad is a mathematician, and I got him to calculate if we froze all the rivers and lakes and people could stand on mountains, I said, how many could fit in America? And I think he came back to me with 80 billion because he was doing square miles and saying everyone can have like a foot in front of them, a foot behind them, and a foot on either side. So if we were all standing like that, like you do in a lineup, we could fit 80 billion in. But that's not what happens, is it? They don't like being in the country. In fact, refugees in rural Scotland were complaining about boredom and saying they wanted to go to Glasgow or London where it's fun. Is that a refugee? Can you imagine going to Dresden during the bombings and saying to the family, hey guys, I can get you to a cabin in northern Scotland where there's no bombing. They'd go, let's go, let's go. The lakes were bubbling. Not the lakes, but the ponds in Dresden during the bombing in World War II, because they were so hot. So people were jumping in them to avoid burning, and they were boiling alive. That's a refugee. That's someone, if you're happy with rural Scotland, you're a refugee. Although I'd love to go there right now. Little cobblestone streets, wee pubs. You know, in rural Scotland, you have your pint glass behind the bar. It's a beautiful glass. It's got a glass bottom, because during conscription, if you gave a man money, then you did a deal and he had to go to war. So the conscriptors would buy men pints and they would finish the pint. Then they'd see a coin at the bottom and they'd be like, you took money from me, you got to go to war. Oh, damn it. So they started making these steel pint glasses with glass bottoms. So you'd pick it up and you'd look on the bottom and see if there's a coin there before you drank it. So that's a big rite of passage in Scotland with a man. His father buys him a pint glass and it sits behind the bar in these small towns like Lead Hills, Scotland. The Hopeton is a wonderful wee pub. That's the tallest town in Scotland, by the way. You see, that was where they discovered that if you put the steam engine on its side, you can build a bloody factory. That led to the Industrial Revolution, which led to the modern world. Lead Hills created the modern world, by the way. Anyway, these refugees complain about being up there because they're not refugees. So you have to look at the numbers and say, how many illegals can we take? I'm going to say none, obviously, but let's be reasonable here. We take in 1 million immigrants a year. Let's change the way we take them in. If we can take in 1 million, let's stop with the family members. Let's stop with the old Chinese lady who picks through the garbage with cans. How did she get here? Let's stop with the diversity quotas that Obama set up that led to that Uber driver who killed 8 people. If we are going to take people from a war-torn country, let's do northern Iraq. Let's take the Christians out of there. Let's go with South Africa. Whites are under siege there. They are being murdered in unimaginable ways, drilled to death with power tools. They're murdering, raping women, murdering children in front of a man, and then murdering the wife, so killing his whole family in front of him as he's tied to a chair, and then letting him go so he'll kill himself. That's how sadistic the murders are there. Yes, there's plenty of black-on-black crime, but the black-on-white crime is particularly perverse. That's going on in South Africa. Let's take some of them. They're on camps now. South Africa is instituted legal revenge, where, and this is true of Zimbabwe, Mugabe, who was declared the goodwill ambassador by the National Health Organization, whatever they're called, World Health Organization, the WHO, or as Ann Coulter calls it, the WTF. He said, go, take their land, kill them. We won't prosecute those murders. Yeah, we're taking our land back. Politicians sing songs about killing white people down there. Fun little ditties. Anyway, you can come. The Coptic Christians in Egypt. Remember the Muhammad video by Nasula Bakuli Nasula, whatever the hell his name was? He's a Coptic Christian, and he made the Muhammad video that Hillary blamed Benghazi on. He made that video to lampoon Islam because Islam was murdering his people. So if anyone should be allowed to do satire, it's this guy. You know, ITV had me on to talk about satire in the age of Trump. My satire is just goofing around. Western satire is just fun. It's junk food. It's fun to eat. But in Islam, in Egypt, in South Africa, in northern Iraq, satire is a crucial tool. In Russia, we had on a guest, Mikhail Svetov, who was just arrested for going to a libertarian meeting that glorified Adam Smith. He was thrown in a paddy wagon, was just pulled in for questioning last night. I had him on my show right before he was dragged into interrogation. because he's a libertarian. And this guy's goal, by the way, is not just to go to Adam Smith conferences, but to get a libertarian in parliament. That's balls. You social justice warriors with your hammer and sickle badges screaming at us for advocating free speech. I would love to see the reverse scenario where you're in communist Russia and you're trying free speech and you're standing up. You know what Mikhail did? Tune into my show. He continued his lecture in the police wagon, in the paddy wagon, in the police van. It's online. It's in Russian, of course. We can't understand it, but he sat there and continued his lecture in front of all these millennials in the police van, which is big. In Russia, the police vans are about the size of my studio. So yeah, if you're going to take in 1 million illegals, then let's have some meritocracy there. Are you an asset? If you're a refugee and you don't have skills, all right, let's start with refugees who are Christian and not Muslim, because we are in a war with Islam. I got in a fight with Andy Levy on Fox News on Red Eye about this. He goes, no, we're at war with radical Islam. I go, no, that's just devout Islam. We are in a war with Islam. It's a global war. America, the world was two-thirds Christian, one-third Muslim, basically, and that's shifting now. One-third Christian, two-thirds Muslim is the future demographically. In fact, a friend of mine in Manchester just had a kid, and he sent me a video of the waiting room. You got to see this video. I should put it up. It looks like Islamabad. It's just men with huge beards and women, not just with the hijab on, but the burqa, where you can only see their eyes. And this is the entire waiting room. There's about six couples in there, and he's having to be very surreptitious when he makes the video too. One thing I like to do, by the way, when you're doing that is you pretend there's something wrong with the cover of your phone and you sort of scratch at it like, what the hell is the matter with my phone? And then that way you can sort of do a panoramic. So that's a bad thing because they are culturally behind us. We probably did murder our daughters for violating some sort of code. We probably did crucify people that we didn't like say Jesus Christ, for example. But they're doing that now. They're crucifying children. And when I see that, it makes me sort of homesick or melancholic, if that's an adjective, for the way we were 500 years ago. They're doing their witch hunts now. Remember when we in Salem, when we threw women in the lake and said, let's see if they drown to see if they're witches? ISIS does that now. They're the same as us. They're just way behind us. And I'm worried with inbreeding that they're going to keep going backwards in time. Look at Tehran. Look at Iran in 1970. It looks like New York City. Women in miniskirts at chemistry classes. Then look at it in 1980. It looks like you got the pictures wrong. It looks like you got the dates reversed. No, it doesn't actually. 1981 Iran doesn't look like 1970 Iran. It looks like 1740 Iran. They went back hundreds of years. And I personally think Quran is a big part of that, but I do think inbreeding is a major factor. And if you ever bring that up with someone and you show them a link, try to find a link where the guy has a Muslim-sounding name, because people are stunned by that fact. And I find it's sort of the easiest way to sort of spoon-feed them the truth is to find an Indian or a Muslim, Panit Makarash, saying it. And they go, okay, maybe if they say it. That's a thing this year with the left. Only the people that are part of that thing can talk about that thing. So men can't talk about reproductive rights because they don't have fallopian tubes. White people can't talk about what it's like to be black or stop and frisk because they don't know what goes on in the hood. So you do have to play that game sometimes and say, all right, here's a black Trump supporter. You believe me now? And they have a complete meltdown. He's an Uncle Tom. So in Pat Buchanan's book, Death of the West, he says we have to dismantle Christianity. That's the way to destroy society. He obviously doesn't advocate that, but he says that's what the left is doing. He says whether you're an atheist or not, you have to recognize that Christianity is the backbone of Western society and at least revere it. If you're going to be a Muslim immigrant, at least respect that you're in a Christian country and assimilate and respect Jesus, celebrate Christmas. I think Jews should celebrate Santa. Santa's not a Christian. He's some, like, it's based on some Nordic god. It's like Thor meets German folk tales, meets some Greek saint who gave prostitutes a bag of gold or something over the top of their wall. It's not non-Jewish to celebrate Santa. In fact, I think Jews in California celebrate. They have Santa and a tree and everything. It's fun, Jews. Come on, that President Day thing that you do, Hanukkah or whatever, you know that's lame. That's the elephant in the room every December, is pretending that you getting an iPhone charger on the third day of Hanukkah is even in the same universe as a guy flying in from outer space and delivering a huge pile of gifts from a giant gift bag all wrapped up under a huge tree. Come on. Come on. Come aboard, Santa. And yeah, Muslims too. Get involved. Assimilate. So if we are going to have immigrants, they should be of our stripe. And I've heard the liberals say, oh, you can't come here unless you think like me. I'm at the point now with the left where when they say exaggerated things about my views, I go, sure, yeah, okay. Like, their insults are true now. I remember one time I was on a message board with some of my old punk friends, anarchists, British people, and I was arguing with them saying, don't you see that Thatcher and Reagan were more punk rock than any other president? They wanted less government. They were more anarchist. Trump is more anarchist. And I just gave up after a while because they're all commies in Britain. And they said, someone told me later, they said, what happened to Gavin? Oh, he's gone. And then someone goes, oh, he's probably touring America with Pat Buchanan, dismantling the government in a giant tour bus sponsored by Nike. That was an insult. I go, are you trying to sexually pleasure me right now? Because I just came. Like, that's an insult? You're going on tour with Pat Buchanan to dismantle the government in a giant tour bus sponsored by Nike? I mean, I don't even want to think about that because I feel like it's disloyal to my wife to have sexual fantasies. I don't think I could imagine anything better. I mean, obviously, my best case scenario is my kids having fun, kid stuff. But outside of my immediate family, that sounds like the best thing in the universe. So when you've dismantled math and you said math is racist and you crushed data, then you can go with the platitudes. And that's what they've done in education now. These Marxist women, these ex-hippies, these con artists have brainwashed themselves and are now brainwashing the youth with stupid platitudes. Schools are Marxist indoctrination jungles. And I see it with my kids. My four-year-old comes home. He tells me he hates Trump. 4 years old. I said, why? He says, because he doesn't listen. I say, good. He's the president of the United States. I don't want him listening. I want him doing. My kids at church, they were told that a gun killed Martin Luther King, and they wished we had a big bonfire where we could burn all the guns. I think they think guns are made of balsa wood. I had to tell my kids, no, actually, Martin Luther King loved guns. He had an arsenal at home because he knew he was going to get killed. And he was applying for a gun permit that the state denied him. In fact, the Democrats have consistently denied blacks legal guns over the years, much to their detriment. So I have to sort of deprogram them every night. Not every night. I also don't want to be dogmatic about it, too. I'm secretly scared that if I go too right, then they're going to rebel. So I'll just stay sort of left centrist. So when it's time to rebel, they take the right road. So these indoctrination schools where they push leftist dogma and tell boys that boys are toxic, and they tell girls that they should be chemists and boys that they should stop raping. And, you know, I sound like I'm, if you're not familiar with any of this, it sounds crazy, but check out C.H. Summer. Check out stories or Lenore Skenazy talking about boys being charged with sexual assault, suspended from school at the age of 4. Because they hugged a teacher and got in her boobs. Yes, boys like boobs. It's a genetic thing. I've seen 2-year-olds grab at chicks' tits. They don't know why they're doing it. It's just a thing. I'm obviously not saying kids are sexual. So I think Christianity, dismantling it, is a great way to destroy a society. But I would put math before that. I think getting rid of math, getting rid of numbers, trivializing numbers is a good way to brainwash people, because once we can say we need more immigrants, we need to spend more money on education, once there's no number behind that, then it's just the platitude. It's just the motherhood statement, the aptly named motherhood statements. Then you can really force it down their throats. Now, okay, good. So now that you don't know any numbers, and now that math is stupid and boring, now I can start just bullshitting you all the time and telling you that cops hunt blacks. You know, what is it? 94% of blacks are killed by other blacks, and that's a lot of people. I investigated, just as sort of a litmus test, Alicia Keys has this video called 29 Ways to Die, and it's all these celebrities saying, for turning right without a without an indicator, for having a taillight off, and then it shows the person who died, for selling cigarettes, and it shows, you know, for having his hands up, and then they show Mike Brown. So it's 29 ways black people have been killed by cops. And then you look them all up and you go, no, that's not really what happened. He had a heart attack. He was trying to kill the cop. This was his fifth offense. You know, Sandra Bland hanged herself in prison. By the way, when it's a person, it's hanged, not hung. Really annoys me when people say hanged. I mean hung. So I looked at those 29 cases and six of them were suspect. Six people a year are unjustly killed by cops. That's the same as spider bites, by the way. And these cops, they go to jail. You know what they say in the police academy to the NYPD? They say, you'll never be closer to prison than when you're in the NYPD. And rookies go, I don't know what that means. And then after 20 years, they go, oh, this is what it means. I could go down at any point. I could get on probation. I could be arrested. But they put a broomstick up Abner Louima's ass. Yes, Justin Volpe did do that. He's in prison right now in Florida. They just got married, actually. They get caught, they get punished. 5% of cops are bad people. They're crappy jerks who want to... you hear how I talk when I'm trying not to swear? You're a crappy jerk. They are dicks who want to abuse their power. But even that 5%, they don't want to lose their pension. The idea that blacks are being hunted is pathologically insane. It's bizarre. If it was in a movie... you'd go, this movie's stupid. This is like Sharknado. Cops hunt blacks? Well, how long does that last? No. Black people have brothers and sisters. Cops have brothers and sisters. You shot a black dude who was at a grocery store? Fuck you. You're not my brother anymore. But without the numbers, you just take a case like Mike Brown and you go, this is a trend. This is a pattern. And now you can start shifting the narrative. Now you have people marching in the streets. What do we want? Dead cops. What do we want them now? So getting numbers is a great way for pushing platitudes. Now now the platitudes have force and no data to check them. Now we really got some momentum to destroy society. Now we're cooking with gas. Now we can have hate watch, right wing watch. We can take Charlottesville and make it into a huge pattern where people are dying all over the place. In fact, Al Jazeera effectively pushes this narrative. AJ Plus does videos that the left gobbles up. This is from Qatar, right? This is from the Middle East, this news organization. And they say, domestic terrorism is the real threat in America. Much more people have been killed by Nazis than by jihadists. Way more. And all you have to do to run the numbers of that is sit in a chair. Go, wait a minute. Nazis are killing people? San Bernardino, Fort Hood, you know, Orlando, the Pulse shooting. No, but Las Vegas was a white man, so that was domestic terrorism. No, we don't know his motive, actually. Motive is a big part of terror. In fact, motive defines terror. If it was done to coerce, then it's terrorism. It's looking like the shooting in Texas may have been terrorism, atheist terrorism. He hated Christians. Now, that's not a pattern. Do you know of any other case of atheist terrorism? No, but there are thousands of cases of Muslim terrorism where the job was to coerce. It was to convert or die. You know, in the Bataclan in Paris, the goal there was, let's politicize everyone. I'm sick of moderates. I'm sick of hipsters. Hipsters like Muslims too much. This is not me talking. This is a terrorist. Actually, it's me talking too. I'm on board with the terrorists in Paris because they did it to start a war and to say, let's stop sitting on the fence. Let's choose a side. And I go, done. Side chosen. Let's do this. They want to fight America. The Parisian jihadists, they want a war with America. They think they can win, probably because they don't do math. China thinks it can win. China's taken over the South China Sea. They've told America many times that if you declare Taiwan independent, not a part of China, we'll kick your ass. And Pat Buchanan has run the numbers and says, it would be a brutal war, but it wouldn't be a long war, and we would win. You don't really have a navy to speak of. We would kick the crap out of you. Anyway. So we kill numbers, we push platitudes, and now let's focus on other things like the family. We have to destroy the family. That's a biggie. I think a good way to destroy the family, too, is to deny that medicine exists. And that also, by the way, the death of math helps with that. So when a doctor says to a 32-year-old woman, you know, you're running out of time. The hourglass of your ovaries gets turned over when you're 30. The sand is dripping out. And the sand is gone by the time you're 35. So 30 to 35 is the finish line. No, that's not true. What? I'm a doctor. No. I know a woman who was 42 and had a kid. Adam Ruins Everything did a whole video about how that's a myth. What? You know, look, you start menstruating when you're what, 13? It's pretty clear that by the time you're 30, you've said to God, I'm done here, and he starts packing up. Women in their 40s have miscarriages galore. I'm 47. All my high school friends are in their 40s. I hear about their fertility drugs, their miscarriages. It's a mess. And here's another thing. My mom, my wife, they did manage to pull it off. They did have a freak occurrence where they had a kid very late in life. My wife was 39. My mom was 40. That's unusual. Very unusual. But feminists are just banking on it. I'll have a career, and then maybe I'll have a kid when I'm 40. And this is a common thing I hear older women say, I'm going to freeze my eggs. That's normal now. That's not pathetic. That's not brutally sad. I'm going to freeze my eggs. And say you do pull it off, and your kid is born, and he doesn't have autism. We're seeing autism shoot through the roof. I've said this before, and I mean no disrespect to these families if they're listening, but I know of five couples where they have a kid who doesn't speak. My heart goes out to you, couples, if you're listening. I'm not disparaging you. I'm not saying you did anything wrong. But that's unusual, is it not? When I was a kid, you never knew anyone who didn't speak. But now it's common, autistic kids. I even know of a girl who's never spoken. She's 7 years old. Autism is very rare in girls. But I can't help but think it's because of these people having them when they're older. But say you dodge all those bullets, all right? You're my age. I'm 47 with a 4-year-old, a 9-year-old, and an 11-year-old. They all want to play 12 hours a day. And I'm sorry, I'm old. If I was 20, I could wake up after 4 hours sleep and just kick ass, start changing diapers right out of the gate. Now I'll chase you for 4 minutes, and then I need a nap. So even if you pull it off and defy medicine, it's not ideal. But the feminists have done this. They've told them that math, that the biology, all that doesn't matter, and you can get married when you're 50. Men will still want you. Sorry, ladies. You're old in New York City when you're 35. You know, 45-year-old men can have any 20-year-old they want, and they'd take them. And it's normal. It's biological. You know, genetically, when you're an old man, you want a woman that can give you a lot of kids. So we've evolved over time to prefer younger women because we might want 5 kids. If your girlfriend's 35, you don't have that option. So let's kill math, and then we can start to kill the family. But another good way to destroy the family, and that's crucial, because if you want to destroy society, you have to destroy communities. You have to destroy the fabric. You have to tear apart that. And communities are built by loving families. Loving Christian families. So let's tear that to shreds. So let's get rid of the family. One fun way to get rid of the family is to desecrate the sanctity of marriage. Now, how do you do that? I'm realizing now, gay marriage. Great way to do that. Now, they pushed the platitudes on us, and I fell for it, I have to admit, where they said, look, you straights don't do marriage very well. True. I believe previous generation was like 60% divorce rate. We, Generation X, we may have pulled it down to 50, but it's still brutal. And, you know, Louis C.K. is in trouble for masturbating, and that's disgusting. But I also hated the way he would talk about divorce like it was cool. He goes, people feel sorry for me when and they say, oh, you got divorced. That's terrible. And they don't understand. I'm coming out of a bad thing. No one leaves a happy marriage. And I go, that's a good story. I noticed you didn't mention children anywhere in your little story about how cool divorce is. You didn't mention the two girls that now get 50% of the parenting that they had before. Parenting being the most crucial part of being a kid. You just divided it by two. No, I'm a good dad. Yeah, you're a good dad. 3 days a week. 4 days a week, they don't have a dad. 4 days a week, something terrible happens. And they have to run to mom. And they get the soft side of the event. Good parenting is mom giving you the soft side, dad giving you the hard side. That was rough, but you shouldn't have done that in the first place. They just get the mom saying that was rough. So the beauty of the gay thing is, first of all, I don't believe it. Milo's madly in love. He's getting married. I'm dubious. I'm skeptical. Let's tune back into Milo in 10 years and see how he's doing. You know, when my wife's mad at me, I think I got to fix this. I can't deny my children a dad. So I cannot get divorced. So I have stakes. I have skin in the game. If I do something stupid, I say, let's work it out. Now, if someone, my neighbor's mad at me, I'll shove him. I don't care. Anyone else, even my bosses, if they, I get fired at CRTV, that's terrible. But I don't really care. I have a plan B. I don't have a plan B with this marriage. So I have to keep things on course. Gays don't have that. I saw Dan Savage doing a big talk about infidelity and how monogamy is not natural. So not only is he not only does he have a fake marriage where there's no monogamy, but he wants us to try it too. Straights. Now, a lack of monogamy works with gays because their relationships are more shallow than straights. Sorry. But if you don't have kids, your relationship is worth less. And again, Louis C.K., God bless his cotton socks, pointed that out. He said, couples without kids, I just want to say, you could die right now and no one would care. And it's kind of true. Like, if you're not married, cheat. I don't care. But it's my girlfriend. Oh, your girlfriend. Your friend that's a girl. Ooh, you're in a relationship. Oh, you met her parents. Wow, I'm so scared. Ooh, you don't want to cheat on your girlfriend. Why? Who does that hurt? Go cheat on her. Hey, ladies, go cheat on your boyfriend. You guys, your relationship is stupid. Gay marriage doesn't involve monogamy and it doesn't involve kids 99% of the time. So you go, I don't take your marriage seriously. I don't believe you. I think you are either a useful idiot or part of this sabotage movement to dismantle society. And Tom Shalhoub turned me on to this when he found out I was pro-gay marriage. And he goes, Gavin, what they're doing is they're making Catholicism immoral. Because our laws are based on morality. It's illegal to kill someone, but not just because you take that person away from that family. It's immoral to kill someone. That's why it's a law. It's illegal to rape someone, not because it's inconvenient or rude, but because it's immoral. Laws come from morality, and they come from God, basically. They come from the Bible. So when we force a Catholic or a Christian to bake a cake, and when we force there was a couple upstate fined $13,000 for not having a gay marriage in their living room, not having lesbians declare their love for each other in their own home, they were fined $13,000. $10,000, by the way, went to the government. $3,000 went to the lesbians, who picked that fight on purpose, obviously. So what you're doing is you're saying, hey, Catholics, if you don't support gay marriage, then you're doing something illegal. And if you're doing something illegal, you're doing something immoral. And if that's your religion, then your religion is immoral. And then that's when I stopped supporting gay marriage. And I went, oh, Shalhoub is right. It's about devalidating Catholicism, and they do this all the time. Christians are raked over the coals. In fact, that's kind of why I became a Christian. I was an atheist when I met my wife. And she's, every time we got a new apartment, she'd run around with the sage. And if someone died, they'd be in a teepee for 3 days doing peyote and crying or whatever the hell they do. I'm not invited. They go to the sweat lodges. And she has her religion, and I know nothing about it at all. Native American church, whatever it is. And I think, well, technically she's Catholic, but I think, why do these Indians get a pass? Why do these Muslims get a pass? Yet Christianity, you have to answer for every word in the Bible. No one cares that the Quran is rife with violence and murder and smite ye above their necks and kill the infidel where he lies. Slay him. They don't get interrogated, but Christianity does. And I thought, why are Westerners not allowed to have a religion? Why do we have to constantly be interrogated? And I thought, screw that. I'm a Christian. Of course, you know, my daughter was the real impetus, you know, seeing a child come out and realizing that this is magic. I almost don't want to talk to people who don't have kids. Yeah, I don't want to talk to atheists who don't have kids. I don't want to talk to policymakers who don't have kids. You're a different person. You're a kid. You're a baby. Sorry. If you don't have a kid yet, you're a child. You are a kid. I want to talk to your parents. So if we can get rid of Christianity and we can lie to feminists about numbers, we can dismantle the family. And once we dismantle the family, we dismantle the community. Now we sort of have these wandering souls. They're easy to peg off. They're like zombies now. Now that they have no religion, no family, no kids, you could just sort of sit on the roof of a deli and just shoot them. But we need more people as we kill these people, these childless zombies. So we bring in immigrants. Now, I don't want to bring in immigrants who are Christian and might have the same values, because that's just the same problem. Now I got to dismantle that. So why don't we bring in people like us, saboteurs? Let's bring in Muslims. Let's bring in refugees who don't even like this country, who want to take it over. And I think, you know, Tony Blair's speechwriter admitted that him and Tony Blair, the prime minister, brought in refugees, Muslim refugees, because they wanted to dismantle the government. I'm shooting this from home. I mean, recording this at home. And my wife is going to tea in the city with my daughter because my family hasn't been dismantled. So I'm just going to tell her that she's on her own. So take apart the family, peg them off, bring in the refugees. And Tony Blair and his speechwriter, they said, we brought in Muslims to mess with the working class, to mess with Laiba. It was really sort of like a prank. They saw the Muslim refugees they brought in as just like dynamite, like little digital spiders, little viruses that'll go in and wreck the working class neighborhoods. They conceded this. Look it up. And I think a lot of politicians bring in Muslims because they see them as a blank slate. They see them as sort of, you know, that movie Will I Am? No, the movie with Will Smith, I, Robot? Not Will I Am. And there's this scene where he's looking at all the robots, and there's just like a sea of these droids. One of them developed a conscience, and he has to go kill it. The rest are just dead robots. And that's what I think politicians see the immigrants they choose as just blank slates that will vote Democrat. But they're wrong. These people do have culture and religion, and it's anti-Western. So you're not bringing in a blank slate that will become a Hillary supporter. You're bringing in a blank slate that will want to reunify church and state, impose Sharia law. The mosque is their White House. So you screwed up, dummies. And this happens many times. Iran, back to Iran with the commies. They had a revolution, the communists, which is basically the same sort of DNA as Hillary. And they put the imams in the government as sort of a placeholder. And they said, you guys will just be the placeholders. Then after the revolution, we'll take over and Iran will be a beautiful communist utopia. And then after 1979, the imam said, no, actually, we're not leaving. And we're not blank slates. We're imposing Sharia. And then look at Iran today, where you get caned, beaten with a cane if you don't wear your burqa correctly. So they brought in a dumb virus. It's sort of like the Avengers movie, where Iron Man gets this sort of a artificial intelligence creature and lets it in to the Avengers system, and it ends up taking over the whole thing and destroying the Avengers. You know, you lie with wolves? So destroy the math, destroy Christianity. Christianity's not cool anymore, right? Like, I go to church. That's weird. In fact, my dad is an atheist who totally terrorizes me for going to church, says it's child abuse, screams at me every time he's drunk. We always fight about it. Mind your own business. But yeah, there's a war on Christianity. Can't even say Merry Christmas anymore. War on math, war on the family, war on tradition. And the end game here, too, is let's make weird normal. So Caitlyn Jenner is a woman. Jeffrey Tambor plays a beautiful trans person on the show Transparent. Wonderful woman. Let's do that. Dave?
Yes.
Can you go downstairs and drive my wife to the train station? I won't need help for the next 10 minutes. Is that cool? Okay, he's gone. So you dismantle Christianity, destroy the family, and you want to make weird normal. So that's, the bathrooms is a good example of that, the trans bathrooms. There's no numbers there to back that up. There's no data. There's no epidemic of trans men. So lesbians with their stupid sweater vests, God, they look so stupid when these women become men, don't they? They dress like Justin Bieber 10 years ago. They've got on that flat cap baseball hat. They wear their jeans low. They've got great abs. They've got no tits. They've got scars where their tits were. And they wear like a sweater vest. So they look like, you know when like black guys in the hood want to dress up and look normal? They overdo it with the nerdy and they wear sweater vests. That's kind of the way lesbians dress. It's a weird demographic. It's like a rap nerd. So there's no epidemic of these rap nerds going into men's bathrooms and men going, "Hey, what's going on? You're a dyke. You're dead, bitch." That never happened. Similarly, there's not an epidemic of these trans men going, "I have to go pee so badly, and I can't go to the boys' bathroom or I'll be raped. So I have to go to the women's bathroom, but when I go in, they beat me with their handbags. I need a special bathroom to make my pee-pees." By the way, ladies, you don't want to be in a men's bathroom, okay? What goes on in there when we're hungover and we're in a stall and you're in the next stall, the carnage that goes on in there, we don't really care who's in there. We're the gross ones. But the sounds we make in there and the explosive diarrhea, believe me, ladies, you don't want to be part of our bowel movements. They're not pretty. I know what happens with women in the bathroom. Out of their butt, every 30 days comes a piece of bubble gum, a perfect cube. And that's where bubble gum comes from. The representatives from Bubble Yum and Bubblicious and all the bubble gum companies come by every woman's home once a month and they gather all their little cubes of bubble gum that have come out into the toilet. And they put them in wrappers. Kind of makes gum seem gross, but a woman's butt is not gross. There's no poo there, so don't worry about it. I don't know why you want to merge these two things, bubble gum and explosive diarrhea that's toxic. But they do. And why do they want to do that? Because there's an epidemic of trans violence in bathrooms? No, because they want to make weird normal. That's a crucial part of dismantling society. We've killed math, we've killed families, we've killed Christianity. Now make trans normal. Now elect trans people. We had two trannies get elected in this election. I talked about it on my show. What was it? Danica Rome and Andrea Jenkins. Go look them up. These are not me with a wig. These are weirdos. Andrea Jenkins is a hideous nut bar who goes to a TED Talk and goes, "Black Pearl. Black Pearl, little boy, happy as a clam, hiding behind his mama, wants to wear a dress." Interesting policies on infrastructure, Andrea Jenkins. And then Danica Rome is a metal singer, gay dude, sang in a metal band, did blowjob jokes, and decided I'm not going to stop wearing my leather jacket, my metal thrash gear. I'm going to wear a dress, and I'm a lady now, and I'm normal, and I have all kinds of very helpful LGBT policies that I'm going to help enact, because straights can't do LGBT policy. They don't understand what we go through. So I'm going to talk about, I don't know, condoms? Like, what the hell is an LGBT policy? Gay marriage is just about it. We already showed you what that's about. So let's make weird normal. Let's make pedophilia normal. Let's, everything weird, let's make it normal. And we do this all the time on the right. We expose them for it. Like when we had that anti-Sharia law, Sharia is not a risk right now in America. But we thought, let's choose something way out on the far, far end, Sharia, and we'll say, that's bad. I guarantee you, everyone showed up there, by the way. Antifa showed up and said, you're anti-Muslim. They attacked us. They got arrested. I mean, one Muslim woman threw hot coffee at my friend. Who, by the way, sorry, a little tangent here. She threw hot coffee on him. He shoved her to the ground. They were separated by the cops. No charges filed. He walked away. She walked away. No record of this. He gets a Quran in the mail every few months at his home. He showed me the envelope. He goes, how the bad word... Do they know who I am? I know once you know someone's name, you get their address. How do they know my name? I didn't sign anything. I may have been in pictures. So they have their own little 4chan where they find a picture, find the guy, find his address, and send him Qurans. He still gets them. That's what goes on behind closed doors that you guys don't know about because the media won't cover it because they're too busy trying to find unicorn Nazis. I have a Proud Boy up in Canada. Who was just, he's under investigation now for wearing the shirts we wear, the black and yellow Fred Perry's. And he's also under investigation because while wearing that shirt, he was caught saying to another soldier in the mess hall, I think most women would be happier at home, most women would be happier as housewives. That soldier, who he said that to, reported him. And now he's under investigation. He can't come on my show and talk about it, unfortunately, as is always the case with these things, because it'll get much worse for him. But yeah, I'm talking to him on the phone all the time. I had another Proud Boy, Antifa. He was antagonizing him online, making fun of them. They came to his house, broke into his home. He's heavily armed and had them face down on the ground with a 45 to the back of their heads in no time. And the police came and is charging them with breaking and entering, B&E. That's what goes on behind these closed doors. And why you have these pussy journalists reporting on a burlesque dancer who once said hi to Baked Alaska, why that's their priority and not the war on the right and the dismantling of American society. Like, go investigate Linda Sarsour. Go investigate mosques. I guarantee you the vast majority of mosques tolerate jihadists. I'm not saying that they sit there and recruit people, but you will find a jihadist at every mosque. I guarantee you will find a racist in every BLM meeting. You'll have at least two or three black people there that will proudly say they hate white people, hate them, wish they would die, wish they just go back to Europe. Guarantee it. But no, that's not fashionable. I want Nazis. I want Charlottesville. They want, when Heather Heyer died, they smiled ear to ear because they thought, finally, something that fits my worldview. Now, we're doing very well. We're almost done here with this dismantling of society. But I want the people that are still alive, the zombies that I'm pegging off, I want to own them. I want them to be indebted to me. So let's, you know, it worked with the miners where they would have to buy toilet paper and stuff with their own money. And then they wouldn't have it, so they would be indebted to me. And then they would, as the song goes, owe their soul to the company store. I want people's souls. I'm a globalist. I want to destroy society, and then with the robots from that Will Smith movie, I want to build up them all to be Gavins, all to be George Soros's. I want to just create drones who wear the same Maoist clothing and speak Esperanto. Soros and his father were big on Esperanto, that sort of perfect universal language that everyone should learn. I don't want individuals. I want one big hive where they can be good and follow my views. I want, I actually do want that. Deep down, we all want that, right? I don't want people to have it, but I do dream of a world where there are no flip-flops and no man buns and no wool hats. Guys I know and like, I'll go meet them and they have a wool hat on in a bar. What are you doing? Wearing a hat? It's not hot. It's not cold. You see guys in New York jogging. It's hot, so their shirts are off. They're wearing shorts, shoes, nothing else, and then a wool hat on. And they're sweating like pigs. Take off your fucking toque, you moron. I would like drones not to do that, but I don't want that, obviously. But Soros does. So he's pegging off these zombies, and he wants to own their souls. The globalist wants to own souls. You want to owe your soul to the company stores. How do you do that? I know. Let's make sure everyone has to go to this thing called college. As my dad said on last week's podcast, it used to be 5% went to college. That sounds like a good number to me. 5% are smart enough to need to go to a learning institution and tackle this tangent on chemistry where they're going to invent a way to sequence the genome. The rest of us, like me, I took English. I could have just gone on Amazon and got a reading list from them and read Dickens and all that stupid crap. I didn't need to go to class. But let's get everyone in here. Let's make college, let's pretend college is some sort of like gym where everyone who goes there is healthier when they come out, even though the opposite is true. You leave college dumber than when you went in. So let's bring them all in. And what we'll do is, in order to get everyone in, we'll lower the bar. So it's not like you need to be smart to come in. We have classes like How to Be Gay. That's a class. You can get a PhD in Beyonce. What's his name? Touré. He's a pundit. Everyone wants to hear what he has. His PhD, I believe, is in Prince, the singer, not the monarch. So we'll get everyone in. And now, when I went to college in Canada, the tuition was $700. I believe by the time I left, it had doubled all the way to $1,500. I worked as a janitor in my college, Carleton University, and terrible school for idiots, by the way. And I left with zero debt. I paid my tuition, my semesters, with my own janitor money. Easy peasy. Only problem was getting up at 4 a.m. in the dark in cold Ottawa and Montreal. I finished at Concordia. But even then, I saw these classes, philosophy of self. My friend Steve would take them all the time. He had a single mom, and she didn't care what he took. Philosophy of self, he took. Philosophy of love was a class he took. What? Philosophy of science was a class I took. We described it on my podcast last week. The dean of the college called it the Flat Earth Society. That's how bad my education was. Anyway, 5%. So we want to get up to more like 95% of people go to college. So we'll just lower the bar. And you can basically take anything. Take mass comm. That doesn't mean... Take media. Take podcasting. I bet that's a class. But we want to jack the price up. So instead of Gavin paying $700, let's make it $250,000. Let's make it $60,000 at least. Let's make sure everyone's $60,000 in debt. And let's really turn up the interest on that so they never get out of that debt. I mean, $60,000, I'm rich as shit. $60,000 is a big hit. That's a really, really nice swimming pool. And, you know, don't buy anything else that year. It's a lot of money for a rich person. For a college kid, I used to squat. When I was punk rock in college, we would stay in squats. We'd eat out of the garbage. We had no money. $60,000 or I've heard of $250,000. Some of these kids don't work in the summer. They go on a vacation because they have so much money with the loan. So they leave with $250,000. You're not paying that off. Plastic surgeons are not paying that off. People think plastic surgeons are rich. There's too many of them. They don't make good money. There's a very tiny percentage at the top who do all the boob jobs and they do great. The rest of them are scrounging with nose jobs and someone with those stupid giant cork earrings fixing those ears for $1,500. They're not rich. Lawyers too. There's rich lawyers, of course. But there's so many lawyers now that your first 10 years, you're scrounging, trying to get up to 60, 70K a year. So 250 debt, not paying it off. So you owe your soul to the company store. And let's also, a house used to be something you could buy. Remember Chris Naracco got a house. He bought it for $300,000 a while ago when he had his first kid, I believe. He was the guy who started Big Brother Skateboard Magazine. Great guy. I lost him in the Vice divorce, though. And he goes, wait a minute, I just did the numbers. By the time I pay my mortgage off, I will have paid 750 grand. He goes, why didn't they just tell me the house is 750 grand? It's not 350 grand, 300 grand. You lied to me. My house is worth, I'm going to pay more than twice that to buy this house. So it's not a $300,000 house. He owes his soul to the company store. So what these Marxist boomers have done with by lowering the quality of education while multiplying the cost by 10 and doing the same, well, they haven't lowered the quality of houses, I guess, but they've multiplied the price of houses by 10. Now these people are paying off these debts for the rest of their lives. So they owe their soul to the government. This is how you dismantle society. You make everyone dependent on the state, but you make it cultural. You fill it with this sort of zeitgeist of feel-good euphemisms, and you say, I'm educated. I'm a homeowner. I'm pro-gay marriage. I'm trans. My kid is trans. I'm an atheist. I'm not married. I'm childless and happy. I'm having a big party. Let's have a tube-tying party. They have parties. When men cut their balls off, they have a party. It's a thing. And they've got these funny cakes that are sort of penis-themed and sperm-themed. When men get vasectomies, they have vasectomy parties now. They've been so brainwashed that you have people going, like, if you cut off a horse's balls, he'd be mad. They don't have parties when you do that. If you go up to any animal and cut his balls off, it'll screech. It won't have a party. But we, the globalists, have done such an effective job of dismantling society and turning us into drones that when you cut our balls off, we celebrate with a birthday cake. So when you, this is what being red-pilled feels like. You realize that there are people out there on the right and the left who want to dismantle society. I don't think they knowingly are carrying out George Soros's globalist plan, but they have been brainwashed, and everything they do, when you check the boxes, you realize everything you're doing is part of the war on traditional Western society. Every act they do, every article they write, every view they espouse, every stupid rally they go to, this woman's march, this we hate march, all of those are, on the surface, seemingly innocuous. Oh, it's just a pro-love march. You like love. That sounds good. I like love, too. Refugees welcome? Yeah, that sounds nice. Someone's being bombed and their kids are going to get killed. Come over here. Take shelter here in my house. What's happening now? It sounds great. It's a platitude, and it's a platitude that is powered by the death of math and the need for globalism. And both of those are in the textbook called How to Ruin America, How to Dismantle Society. And once you realize that's what's going on, you realize that me being a dad, you having kids, you having a family, you not getting divorced, you being a Christian is a revolutionary act. You being a traditional Westerner is revolutionary. You having a big family, starting a business, paying your bills, paying off your house, not giving your kids college debt, not having a college debt, not listening to this feminist claptrap about eternal ovaries, fighting back against all of that, making America great again, is a revolutionary act. So, us folks in the suburbs taking our kids to Little League are the new Paul Revere's. We are fighting the globalist attack. When you say Merry Christmas, within that phrase is a tiny revolution. And it's lots of tiny revolutions that are going to fight back against this global eradication of our values. We fought long and hard to get here. There was a hell of a lot of trial and error to create the West. It wasn't easy separating church and state. The Industrial Revolution was a slog. Bringing infrastructure to the rest of the world was not colonization. It was an overall improvement, and it enriched both sides of the fence. We're not going to let these globalists undo all our hard work. We're not going to let them dismantle society. We are going to look at the numbers. We are going to look at the truth and the data, and we are going to speak about it freely. We are going to exercise our First Amendment without apology because we have an agenda here, and our agenda is to rescue the West.